great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome back Billy Sheehan and Richie Kotzen from the Winery Dogs. They've been out touring the U.S. and will be hosting an interactive, immersive musical camp called the Dog Camp in July. We'll also be taking your calls live. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flodizzo Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show for tonight. It's really great to have Richie and Billy back on the show. Scott, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing good. I just wanted to let everyone know real quick that we will be taking calls. And so get the number ready, 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, but we're taking the calls probably at the bottom of the hour of our bottom of the show, so around in a half an hour. And we'll also be announcing the winner of the Samson Meteorite USB microphone and the Hot Tone Whip. And I just posted up a video actually from last week's show with the Zex Coil pickups that we did a demo inside on the show, and then also finished up the Watts Wah build where I built the Wah Wah from Mod Kits DIY. And put the video up that and demonstrated that. So it's a pretty cool little wah, actually.
It was pretty good. We tried it against one of the standard wahs, and it sounded pretty close.
Yeah, we'll definitely have those guys on to talk about those mod kits, because it definitely teaches you a lot about how a pedal's made and how to make one. So, you know, that's exactly what I was doing. I never made one myself, so it was pretty fun. What have you been up to, Jeff?
Been working, doing some more guitar work. I brought down the Flowcaster tonight to let the guys see it, and that I'm still amazed by those X-Coil pickups. They are so quiet, even in these rooms with the fluorescent lights. In the studio, we have fluorescent lights, and they're really amazing. I want to thank them for letting us have the pickups to try out, because they're just really great. I'm sold on them.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
well, why don't we take a quick break, and then just remind everyone again, we'll let you know when we'll be taking callers, and we'll announce the winner of the
Giveaway. If you haven't signed up, be a better. When is it closing? In about 20 minutes?
I'll close in about 20 to 30 minutes.
You still have a chance to get that. That's some cool stuff. So yeah. That hot tone little distortion pedal is really nice. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, we will be right back.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here, one of the many guitar freaks at Sweetwater. We're proud to support the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show, and we carry a huge line of signature guitars, pedals, and amps from the most sought-after manufacturers. Check this out, sweetwater.com/guitar gallery. You can see hundreds of custom and signature guitars and actually choose your perfect instrument by grain pattern and serial number. Or call us professional guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. This week, the Flow welcomes Richie Kotzen and Billy Sheehan. Between Poison, Talus, Niacin, Mr. Big, and now the Winery Dogs, these guys have helped shape the modern guitar and bass experience on so many levels. Case in point, Sweetwater has both Richie's signature Fender Telecaster and Billy's custom EBS drive bass pedal with compression in stock now and at great prices. Have fun as Scott and Jeff hang with Richie and Billy, and be sure to check us out at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. This is Kenny Burgle with Sweetwater saying, rock on with the Flow.
Hey, this is Tracy Guns, and right now you are listening to the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts Show with Scott and Jeff and Andy and Tracy, and we're all here partying and going nuts. Anyways, this is the only guitar show I know of that you get to listen to guitar players and manufacturers talk about the cool stuff, and you can call in and talk to them, and you're going to have a good time.
We'll be right back.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to officially welcome Richie Kotzen and Billy Sheehan here in the studio. Welcome back, guys.
All right. It's official.
We're here.
So I do just want to let everyone know, so that opening music, I had just changed it this morning because we had been told that Richie was not able to make it, but he is here, and we are very grateful to have him here, so I do apologize there was not some solo stuff.
It was a conspiracy.
It was ready, but I had to change it at the last minute. But anyway, so you guys have been out on tour. You guys have just done the East Coast, and you're going to start the West Coast. So how is that going? How's the tour going this time around?
It's been amazing, and we've really... you know, to think that we're doing this much touring in the United States. I think when we add this up, we'll have done over 3 months worth of dates just in the United States, which was a really great surprise for us. You know, we didn't know what to expect with the record, but the response in our own country has been so awesome, and we're so happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are kicking back up next Tuesday, I think, right?
I believe so.
Ramona, California, looks like, and you've got a couple local dates here in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills and Agora Hills.
It'll be my first time playing Beverly Hills.
Yeah, we're playing at a very cool historic place. It's a beautiful theater, the Saban Theater, and built in the 20s, I believe. And it was remodeled, I think they put like $15 million or something into it. I hear it's just stunning inside, so I'm looking forward to that.
Cool.
So one of the things I wanted to talk with both of you guys about with the tour is you guys have been doing what people would do differently than what maybe in the 80s or 90s. You guys are doing a lot of like fly gigs, and so that requires you to do different type of setups. Can you guys kind of go through your setups and talk about what you've done differently to kind of limit them down?
I'll go first only because the fact that you're using the word fly is funny because I was doing a lot of fly dates prior to the Winery Dogs. We have a bus now, so we're not doing as many fly dates in this band. We're on the bus more often. But I was doing a lot of dates where I would fly in and be on a different rig as far as the amp was concerned, sometimes not even have a guitar tech. And so I wanted to have the most simple kind of rig I could have. And if you look, there's a video that's on my website. It's an older video, and I'm playing live, and they go down to my feet, and there's a black box. Mm-hmm. I call it the Gumbiaha box, which is Portuguese for, you know, half-ass. And so I took my main overdrive, my main delay, and the switching circuit to turn the reverb and the tremolo on and off in the Fender amp, and I condensed it into this tiny little box with six buttons on it. Mm-hmm. And so that way when I go set up, I literally throw one box on the floor, it powers the wah, and plug it into the wall, and it's great. Well, I went all around the world with this thing, and it worked, and suddenly one day it didn't work. So I showed it to a friend of mine at the company Tech 21, mm-hmm. and he found a way to make this for me in a professional manner, and not only more professionally built, he made it even smaller.
Yeah,
nice.
It's really, I can't wait till this comes to the marketplace. And I fine-tuned the overdrive. We finally now just settled on the kind of overdrive circuit we're using, and I'm just thrilled. I can't wait to share this thing with everybody. And it's called the Fly Rig. That was the whole point of the story.
And that's coming out then, right?
That will be out, yes.
Now, the one thing I've noticed from seeing different videos you guys playing live, now, you recorded the album mostly with a Vibro King, right? A Fender Vibro King?
It's mixed. The Vibro King, the Bassman, the Vibro Lux were the three Fenders, and then Marshall as well. I have a 100-watt Plexi Marshall that's on the record. I have the 20-watt hand-wired head. I don't know the model number, but it has two knobs on it. I use that a lot. And I have the combo version of that. So I had, when I did guitars, I took all the stuff out of the studio and just set up all the amps I wanted to use and had them mic'd and ready to go so I could combine whatever I wanted to do.
And now you're using just a Marshall, looks like, correct?
Live, I'm using a 100-watt Plexi now, yeah. And it's a hand-wired one, like one of the really nice ones that they made for me.
It's red, too, which is really
nice. It's orange.
Oh, it's orange. Yes. I thought it was red. That must be the LED lighting changing it. Billy, how did you shrink down your rig?
Well, it was difficult for me because I've used Pro Audio stuff my whole life. Mm-hmm. Custom preamps, Pro Audio crossovers, compression, power amps, all rack mounted. I was explaining earlier, I may have been one of the first guys ever to have a rack of gear on stage. I started about 1973 with my first rack before Anvil even made racks. Mm-hmm. They were called Bud Racks. A Bud company would make these metal boxes that basically pedals are built into. They're the first company to make these little Bud experimental boxes, and they were the only ones that made racks. And I had to have these metal racks on stage with me. And so to bring that down smaller and smaller and smaller over the years, it got smaller, but it still, you know, was a rack of stuff. So finally I worked with EBS, trying to basically do a pedal version of what my Pierce preamp did. Pierce preamp is two channels of preamp. Both channels are on at the same time. One is clean, one is distortion. You can mix them together. It's like having two faders on a console. So where a lot of the distortion pedals, they got a mix control, so you got to go between one or the other. And it doesn't never... I've tried a few of them, and the idea is good. Might work for somebody else, but didn't work for me. So the EBS pedal has a way to mix your clean and distortion signal. Distortion on it is real nice. The compressors I'm using, fortunately for me, MXR just came out with their little white bass compressor, it's called. And it's white, and it's called a bass compressor.
Yeah, I think... I have the model. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
It's the MXR M87.
M87. And which is a true 5-knob compressor, which is more like the Pro Audio compressors, which are input, output, attack, release, and then ratio. So a lot of guys, my buddy Scott Ochita from Dunlap, he said some guys from studios are having to put Canon connectors on the pedal to use them in the studio because they really sound great. So fortunately for me, just at the right time, a compressor came out that is comparable to Pro Audio stuff. So I use EBS and those compressors. I got a little Rolls. They make a tiny two-way crossover. Mm-hmm. It's a crossover thingy. I also have a EBS low octave thing in there, too. But it's a pretty simple setup, and I can just go on a little board, fit right in my suitcase, and we're gone. So it helps to get... traveling is tough. Flying is hell.
Yeah,
it's an evil, ugly experience, no matter how you slice it. So this makes it a little less evil and slightly less ugly.
So how do you deal with the amps? Do you rent those in different cities?
Yeah, on the bus for this tour in USA, I took my own out with us. But
I took mine too.
In London, they'll have Harkey will have the amps I use. In Tokyo, in Jakarta, all the places I've been, even in India, Harkey has had stuff ready for me there. So I carry all my personal stuff, and I show up in the amps that I use. The LH1000 and LA5500 are there.
Now,
I have a quick question. Okay. How many guitars do you take with you? Is that a problem, or have you cut down the amount of guitars?
I for years have been touring with one guitar.
Really?
Just because of the kinds of runs that I was doing and trying to travel light. With the Winery Dogs, I take two electric guitars and one acoustic. And Billy, you take two basses?
Yeah, two basses. I carry one on and check one. And I try to fly business class. And that way you can get on, no problem, get your bass on. Or you get really good status with your airline thing so you can get on before everyone else if you're not flying business. That way they don't... And mm-hmm. On the plane, they never give you a hard time. You walk on the plane, oh, sure, sir, let me help you. Put it right up here, no problem. But at the gate, they're always... completely jerks about it. You know, oh, there's no way this is ever going to fit on the plane, and you're going to have to, you know, put you through hell. And many times I've been through arguing and, you know, just nothing but traumatic, upset, freak out at the check-in counter and at the gate. And I finally walk down the jetway with my bass on. Hello, sir, let me take that for you. Yeah, let me put it right up here for you. Is it, come on, will you go talk to the people up at the gate to tell them that it's not a problem?
I got a funny story for you. I was going to Brazil with my band, and the bass player had a really beautiful Padula.
God.
Fretless bass, that's what he was playing, and it was on a gig bag.
Yeah.
And they would not allow him to take it on the plane, and so we're like the bass is going to get destroyed, this is a nightmare. So they gave us this big cardboard box, and we took a bunch of plastic bags and blew air into them and tied them and put it around the gig bag with the gig bag in the box. And we got to Brazil, and sure enough, this big box came off, and his bass was there, and it was fine. And then on the way home, the Brazilians left him take it on the airplane, and it was no problem. But here, trying to leave L.A. with it, it was like a nightmare.
Do you still have to pay, like, the half rate for the good bass, or do they just let you take it on?
It goes in the overhead, it goes in the closet. No problemo. Flying ANA Airlines in Japan was a real problem. Go in there, no trouble. Sir, yes, come on, put it right in, no problem. Oh, thanks so much, okay, great. We get there, and they went berserk, and they would not let it on the plane unless I bought a seat for it. Domestic Osaka to Tokyo flight. So we went through all kinds of hell with the promoter, buying the ticket and running around and scrambling before the flight left. I walk in to the plane, put it in the overhead, and then took photos of the empty seat next to me, saying, "Look, you know, it's just a look. You know, get your money back from these people, you know." So the airlines can be really tough, but I think the unions now have stepped up and have made a thing with the all the people that run the airline unions, and it's you should be able to take your instrument on board
unless you're on Ryanair. Then you have to stand up and fly.
Ryanair is a,
they have seats on Ryanair, which is a European airline. They were trying to make this happen. Where you stand up in the back part, and it's this weird seat that keeps you upright so they can get more people in. So it'd be like a $20 flight to fly from Frankfurt to Paris.
They have a hole in the seat, too, so you don't have to get up.
Yeah, no. I'm serious. It's on the internet.
No, I've seen it. It's crazy.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, musicians that are flying, you know, there's a couple of precautions, you know, to take. You know, you take your gig back. Generally, if I gate check my instrument, or have to, you know, when you get on a small plane, you got to put it on the little cart as you walk out to the plane, and they put it on and take it off. Never had a problem with that. It's no big deal. The guys, you know, the baggage handlers, they're like you and I. You know, they understand. They're cool, generally. You know, but musicians flying, it's always a pain in the neck. So,
now one thing I wanted to ask real quick: have you had? And then we'll maybe talk about the dog camp. Have you guys had any issues with some of the wood restrictions bringing guitars in foreign countries?
I had something really weird happen. When Fender sent me a couple of my signature model Strats from Japan, we did a run of them in red, and I had to like approve the color. And there was a note in there from the government that I was in a violation because I was importing a rare shellfish, and it was because the dot markers were abalone, and it was all these documents, but the guitar arrived at my house, so it didn't make any sense. But I didn't have any problems with the wood, but I did have that tag because of the abalones.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah, I've actually seen some of the Paul Reed Smiths now where they actually put Brazilian on there, and they'll actually put on the back for USA only, basically telling the musician, don't be stupid and take this out of the country.
Really?
No, yeah, kidding. Yeah. Because I mean, it's because of those new laws. I can't remember what the name of the law is, but
didn't they raid Gibson or something?
Like yeah, trying to take... yeah. This is where it all kind of came up. Was when they raided Gibson for all that. Then everyone's like, "Whoa, wait a minute! There's some crazy environmental laws that are
with weapons." They raided the factory.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They came out with.
They
weapons.
Confiscated all their wood.
Yeah. Yep. With machine guns.
That's outrageous. Yeah. And the wood's already there, man. Like,
actually,
maybe
they
stopped them from buying new wood, but that wood's already sitting there. You might as well make it's there well, to make
the thing
guitars
is what I heard was that it was all their stuff was all legitimate, and they eventually got it back, but the government held it for almost a year. Yeah. Which is like
financially,
deadly.
What does that do to a company? I mean, it's like
they couldn't
disaster.
Do anything. They couldn't.
I think Gibson had a little political leanings, quite frankly.
Yeah, well,
one way or the other, and that's why they got it.
Yeah. Oh well, that's yeah. I mean that. I think that kind of was obvious when someone was a guest at the State of the Union buying.
Yes.
But yeah, I do have a question from our chat room. They were asking about your Walk With Me solo song that you just released.
Oh.
And you were playing the theremin, and they wanted to know
if
you
enjoyed playing the theremin. Actually, that record is out in Japan, and it's a part of a package. It's not available yet anywhere else. The video is up. But the video has existed for a long time, and it will be available in September. You can buy the record. But there's a guitar guitar issue with that song, too, that's interesting. First of all, the theremin is in the song because I heard it when I wrote the song. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted the theremin in there. And I actually went online and for $400 bought a theremin just to play on that song and then spent a week and a half trying to figure out how to play it. But the more than interesting than the theremin is the guitar amp. And I had a lot of different versions with different guitar amps. You know what I ended up using? You know what amp was the amp that got the exact sound that I was hearing that wasn't occupying too much space? It was a pig nose.
Oh, wow.
With batteries.
Really?
That's cool. They're cool little amps.
I had it a little bit open. I got the right level so it broke up the right way and put a 57 in front of it. And that was the guitar sound that I was hearing. So, you know
people still talk about old pig nose from the old.
Oh, those are cool.
You talk about gear and trying to get tone. It's like there is no definitive answer. It just depends on the sound you want to get.
Yeah, the
I think Frank Zappa used a pig nose for
Danny Davy Johnston for Elton John. That's Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. That was the pig nose.
That's cool.
And it was We have a bunch of people. I just want to welcome in the chat room. There's a bunch of people from Brazil.
Okay,
big fans of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy, Roberto is his name in the chat room.
Okay.
Wanted to know about if you have an upcoming DVD because everybody in Brazil wants to. He wanted to know if you were going to come out with a new, you're going to release a DVD.
A live DVD? Well, the Winery Dogs have a live DVD that we did in Japan, and mm-hmm. it was our second show,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool. Because it's the second show, there's things in there that are just
there's
crazy.
Mistakes.
There's mistakes. But it's interesting. As far as me with my solo stuff, I haven't even thought about it because, until I start getting out playing with my solo band, I don't know. But
if you want to pick up that DVD, it's called the Dog Treats, right?
Dog Treats.
Yeah, and that's for the U.S.
DVD in it.
Yeah, and
I'm
then
not sure how they sell it elsewhere.
I know it's released regular by in Japan.
Unleashed in Japan, I believe it's called.
Yeah, actually, Prime. If you are on Amazon, you can order it and import. If you
or want. If you come to our show, you can buy it right there at the merch table. That's the best way.
Well, there you go.
See.
Now, you guys are doing what you're calling a dog camp in July, which is July 21st through the 25th. It's at the Full Moon Resort. And for those of you guys that don't know about it and want to learn more about it, it's winerydogcamp.com. Mm-hmm. Can you guys tell us about that, what you're hoping to accomplish at that, versus someone like you host clinics. What are you trying to do beyond a clinic?
Yeah, well, I do lots of clinics around the world, and mostly it's just when I do a clinic. I just did one at Sweetwater, as a matter of fact, the Gear Fest.
We love Sweetwater.
Last week, yeah. And I generally, I go out, I play bass, and then we talk, about anything. I answer any question about anything, show people how to play, bring them up, have them show them how to play something on bass, talk about the music biz, songwriting, amps, gear, anything you could imagine. So, but it's me as an individual. So the dog camp is kind of unique in that it's going to be the whole band, myself, Mike, and Richie. It's not going to be just about. It's going to have individual things as well, guitar playing, bass playing, drum, and all that stuff. But it's also going to be something you rarely see is how the interaction of a band works, how you put people together in a band, how you work within a band writing songs, how you interact with each other when you're performing. And so it's a little bit of a kind of a special thing that I don't remember myself seeing whole bands doing things like this before, though they probably have, and I just haven't known about it. But I think it's interesting that the three of us as a band are going to kind of explain how we do what we do and why we do what we do and in what manner we do it, and explain that to the campers and split them off into bands and have them work with each other. And we also have some other musicians joining us that are going to be lending their expertise to the whole thing. It should be a riot. It's going to be a lot of fun too. Richie and I have both done the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camps, which are amazing, incredible experience. And those are a lot of fun, but they're a lot of work. We're going to be hanging out too, So I might actually do one night where I do my I got my huge iTunes collection of about quarter of a million songs.
And I think that's the finale night. It's going to be DJ and storytelling with the Winery Dogs featuring Billy Sheehan. He has his hard drive with thousands of songs, rare stuff. And
wow.
Yeah,
so I'll play some stuff, demos of our stuff too, mm-hmm. demos of, Dave Lee Roth demos, Talis demos, stuff that.
Wow, that's worth the price.
I mean, that's
right
worth
there.
The whole camp right there.
it truly is.
Hearing the Dave Lee Roth demos.
So what are you trying to hope to get?
I'm actually pretty involved right now in writing the curriculum for this, and I've been trying to figure out how we can make all this work. And one of the things that I came up with is a concept called a discovery room. And basically what's going to happen is we're going to have all of us will have a room during the day. And when I say all of us, there's seven of us that are going to be what you would call instructors doing seminars, including Mike, Billy, and I. And so we can have these rooms set up during the day where the people that are on the camp can wander about. So you wander into Mike's room, and there's a drum set there, two drum sets. And the reason I call them discovery rooms is that the what happens in the room, the questions that are asked, will dictate what goes on in the room. So you're going to discover different things about, like, music or about recording, but it's all going to be led into the natural discussion. So, for example, maybe some kid says, "Hey, Mike, you know, how do you do this one kind of a roll on the drums?" "Well, come up. There's a drum set. Sit down. I'll show you." And then he shows them. Maybe they jam together, and then maybe something else happens out of that. And suddenly they're talking about songwriting or how the size of the drum, whatever it is. But I think it'll be nice because the camper will be able to wander about. If they get tired of hearing about drums, they can go in and listen to Billy talk about bass or whatever. So it's a nice opportunity to get some one-on-one time with us and the people that attend it, rather than just sitting at a clinic with, you know, 50, 60, 100 people in a room. You know, it's going to be smaller groups.
Yeah, the hands-on thing is really important, man.
Yeah.
Even in my clinics, I try to make it as one-on-one as possible. When there's, you know, sometimes in my clinics, I have like 2,000 people at the clinic.
Like a rock show.
And it's hard to do one-on-one. But this would be cool. We got about, I don't know, under like 100, 150 people maybe. I'm not sure what the number is. But even though it's a lot of people, we're going to have time, and you know, all day long we'll be hanging out there. And it's a cool thing. Plus, we end up making a lot of friends at these events. You know, where a lot of people come out and see us play. They're coming to camp as well.
We have some shows planned, too. The Winery Dogs are going to do a full set. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a set with my band. And also, we have a jazz trio that's going to get up there, and they're shredding the jazz trio, so that's going to be really great. There's a lot of cool stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast.
Now, I know one of the questions I would want to ask you guys is, you know, with the Winery Dogs, you guys do a lot of vocal stuff, a lot of harmonies, and you play... You guys aren't, you know, you guys aren't playing three chord rock here, man. You guys are, you know,
a lot of lines.
You guys are doing some stuff. So, yeah, what kind of advice or how would you show a musician that, you know, how would they combine their singing skills and be able to play complicated stuff, not just, you know, rock around the clock, you know, kind of stuff?
Well, generally, I remember Mr. Big opened for Rush back in the '90s. We did the whole Presto tour, the entire tour, and then some of the Roll the Bones tour, the next tour they did. And I remember talking with Geddy Lee about it because he's, you know, such a great player, and he's the lead singer for everything all the time. Now, playing guitar and singing, I can do that. That's not so hard for me. But playing bass and singing, it's a whole different disconnect when you got to do the finger picking.
Yeah.
As you well know, Richie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's strumming and playing. That's not so bad. But Geddy said he'd have to go a couple weeks before a tour and just go in a rehearsal and pound through it until they could play it and sing it. You know, do it slowly, piece at a time.
Yeah, the piece at a time thing is like dissecting, like what rhythmically is happening, and you have to dissect it in time. And even if you only take like the four beats and dissect, what am I playing in time? Play it slowly. Now, what am I trying to sing? And what happens for me is it'll click all of a sudden. It's like, ah, I see what's happening. So this is happening on this third, you know, beat of this, and that's a 16th note on the fourth beat or whatever. It clicks, but you have to work through that wall. It's like breaking through a wall slowly, little brick by brick, pulling out, and then suddenly, I see what's going on. I can get through this, you know.
Have you ever written something where you kind of like, and you go and you do it in the studio, and then you're kicking yourself later and like, what the hell, why did I play that? Because now I got to play it live.
All the time.
And that's why, you know, eventually... There you are. There's the mountain. You got to climb it. So you got to figure it out. I've been in many situations where I don't know if I can do this. Gee, you got to.
Yeah.
You got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Whether it's some line with niacin, a lot of the lines are all keyboard lines, and they don't really land anywhere on the fretboard. Well, you got to play it. So I got to think of something, you know. And that challenge is good for you as a player, singer, player. Where you got to do it. You have no choice. It's on the record. We got to do it like that. So let's figure out some way. You know.
Speaking about prepping for the shows and during when you're on tour, we got a couple of people that are interested to know if you do what kind of exercises you do for your voice, or do you do exercises for your voice to warm up?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, here's something that's really weird that happened on this last tour. I stopped warming up like at all, and I got away with it for a while. It was weird. And then, like, there was a couple times where I felt like, I can't sing. I probably should do some exercise, and I did them. But a lot of the shows, I didn't warm up at all. And I had some of my like one of my best shows was in Jacksonville for some reason. I didn't warm up at all. I didn't do anything. I just got on stage and whoa, there's my voice. But it's weird being a singer because so many things affect you. If you don't have enough sleep, if you're distracted mentally, sleep is a big deal. Being tired, alcohol, talking too much is a problem. Alcohol is a huge problem because it dries you out. And so I'd say the most important thing is being well hydrated and well rested. And then it's good for your voice to do exercise. It's just to warm up at least for 15 minutes before you go on. Actually, something interesting happened on the cruise. I had done I was about to do four shows in a row. And the night before, I did a show with my solo band, and we partied all night. We were sitting in there drinking. And the next day, I was hurting. And I was sitting at the bar, and we had an afternoon show, so I didn't have much recovery time. And my friend Paul was sitting there with me, and I said, I don't know, I don't be able to sing. I got to be on stage in 30 minutes. He said, drink hot water with lemon and just keep drinking it, and don't stop. And literally, I was pounding hot water and lemon. I got on the boat and did the last show. I sang fine. So, I don't know.
Well, you didn't warm up, though. We were hitting it hard on this last tour, too. So, you know, you already probably warmed
That's
up
probably
from
why.
Playing the night before.
That's exactly
right.
So,
yeah.
Same thing with bass. I gotta warm up. But if I played six nights in a row of two-hour shows, I'm pretty warmed up.
But also, too, I know I used to work with some R&B singers that used to do the scream, you know, like the old that wow type of thing. Which normally, if you just do it by yourself, it can really rip your vocal cords. But there's a technique to that to actually do that where it sounds good and, you know, you don't hurt yourself.
And it's not very loud.
So probably that might be another thing because I'm sure you got to really belt a lot and you're hitting some high notes and stuff. But
my voice is not very loud and it's surprising. I mean, if I can't sing now because I did, you know, had a rough night, so I'm trying to take it easy. But the point is this. My voice, when I sing, it sounds like I'm screaming, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm singing really, it's not very loud, you know, because I'm singing correctly. You know, I know, and I went through two throat surgeries, had nodes twice, and had surgery twice. So after that, I went to a real teacher, and I learned what I was doing wrong, and I learned why I lose my voice and placement and all those important things. It doesn't mean my voice is always perfect, because it's not, because I get tired I can't hear myself, and then I do start to scream if I can't hear myself. But provided you can hear yourself and provided you're healthy, if you know how to sing and you have technique, you'll never lose your voice.
Yeah. No, I've heard that before, but that just confirms it. Yeah, you can. There's a way to do it without straining the muscle.
I went to the same guy. His name is Ron Anderson, a vocal coach. And I can sit with a guitar and a bunch of friends, and I've done it 4, 6, 8 hours hanging, partying. Never lose my voice.
You lose a voice speaking. You lose
singing. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you can do that wrong, too. You can speak wrong and strain it.
I just wanted to ask. I wanted to have... talk to show have Billy show how he does some of his harmonics, and then I also wanted to you're really famous for doing kind of your bending your neck to get the lower kind of talk about how you get all those different harmonics on the bass.
Well, there's a couple ways of getting them. Basically, a harmonic is just when you slightly touch the easiest one to get is the 12th fret, the normal note is distortion on the bass with my pedal here, so I got to dial in a little distortion, brings it out a little bit more. So that's the note when you hit it on the 12th fret. Now when you go halfway between that and the nut again, you get another harmonic halfway again. So every time you cut the string in half in length, there's your next harmonic. So there's all kinds of ways to actually just scroll down the string and get all those notes. Just by touching it, I put my hand over the neck sometimes, only because it kind of flattens out my fingers and they land on it, as opposed to this way and they're curved, more awkward. Then you can tap on the fretboard. That's another way there. And then you can like do a hammer on and use your thumb on your right hand. You're still getting all those notes again. And then I do a thing called a pinch harmonic. It's a... the guitar player plays a harmonic. He slips off the pick and the soft part of his thumb hits the string, and you get a harmonic. So since I don't have a pick, I use the my fingernail to pluck with on my middle finger up against the thumb, like I'm pinching the string in there. Actually, comes from I got it from Billy Gibbons. I saw Billy Gibbons New Year's Eve 1974 opening up for Alice Cooper, original lineup, and he went. And I had to figure out a way to get that sound. Since I didn't have a pick, I figured out how to do it with my fingernail. But the fingernail does come off.
So
we're doing Birdland with Niacin in Tokyo. Two shows a night for 6 nights. And by the last show, that fingernail was coming off. And that is, I forget who did the torture with underneath the bamboo shoots underneath the fingernail, but that's what it was like. So sometimes I actually literally had to super glue it back on again. Just put a little super glue in there, gap between the nail and skin, squeeze it tight, right out of the speed again. So there's a couple ways of doing it, and it's nice to have on bass, to have that one little extra thing, you know? So if you're just playing normal bass notes, to be have that one. Extra thing, and especially in a three-piece band, which I love playing Winer Dog so much, you get all this room to do these little extra things that normally you'd have a keyboard player, or a rhythm guitar player, or horn section do. You got room to move like that, so you can put little things in there that add a little frosting to the cake. So, that's my story said.
And since we've got the GoPro on there, it just makes for a cool video. Show us the how you actually change the note by bending the neck.
Yeah, the neck on any instrument will bend. Pretty much. Some more than others.
Also, these kids are going to have, like, broken necks. Mom, I need a new bass.
His bass is made for this, for guys.
I've never broken one, but I think there was a guy who was a United States Marine Corps guy who had one of my Yamaha basses and did manage to snap the neck. So it is possible. With my little toothpick arms, no way I'm breaking this thing. So, but it's something at the end of a tour when I just go, it doesn't matter if the bass breaks down. So what I'm actually doing is I'm pushing against the strap. The strap is here. That's why on the NV43345 on the secret teeth end of that album, the Talus album, you hear the grinding of the strap up against the thing. But it basically just Pete Townsend used to do a little bend like that on his SG, and that's a real flexible guitar. So doing it on bass, I can drop my low E string down to a D with my detuner. And actually bend that down to a B.
Wow. Wow.
That's really bending a lot.
It's really bending a lot.
So it's a little and it dangerous. Doesn't break.
No, it does not.
It's a little precarious.
Well, I think we're getting here about...
We're almost out of tweeting.
No, but we got to take some callers. So why don't we take a caller, and then while we're doing that, I'll figure out who the winner is of the pedal and the microphone.
Okay, here we go. Here's our caller. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Do you have a question for Billy or Richie?
Yes, I do.
And what's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Ashton Rowlands, and I'm calling from Baxley, Georgia.
Georgia.
Right on.
All right. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for calling.
So what question do you have for Richie and Billy?
I have a question. I've been playing guitar and bass now for about 5-6 years, and I've been wondering about the different what woods Billy and Richie use for the guitars. I'm going to college to design instruments.
I use I like maple necks. That's what I have on my guitar. So the neck is maple, and I like the look of the flame top. So I have that flame maple top. I also like the way it sounds, and I discovered for some reason many years ago that Fender made me a guitar that had a swamp ash back and a curly maple top, and I just loved the way that sounded. And I asked them, "Well, what's the wood combination?" And so that's what I ended up using in my signature guitar. I just copied that, and I never really experimented from that beyond that because I like it, so I'm used to it, and that's what I use.
I'm not sure what the wood is on my bass. It might be alder or it might be ash. Might be, I think it's alder. But it's artificially aged. My the Yamaha version 3 attitudes, they do an artificial aging process on the wood, which is quite elaborate. I've seen the machine they do it with. It's pretty amazing. But for me, I don't really... I just want like a lighter, bouncy, boingy wood. That when you hit it, you hear a little wood tone. Denser, heavier woods tend to be brighter because they don't move as much. Well, when a string moving on something that's got more air in it, the wood itself moves, so you get tonality from it. Where like a really... I remember some of the real hard tropical woods, bodies made out of that, the guitars are brighter. And I like a more wood tone. But like Richie, myself also, I use a maple neck with maple fingerboard. Actually, it's a one-piece neck. So I think. Mm-hmm. Look at it again. Might be, yeah.
One of the people in the chat room says he has a Yamaha Attitude 2.
Good.
And he wanted to know if your guitar is any different or is it exactly the same? Is that the same setup? Or?
Yeah, I play production models. I don't play the like a custom shop version.
Okay,
and that's cool. And that's one of the deals with all my stuff. I don't use a custom version. Mm-hmm. I use exactly what you get on my pedal, my strings, my bass, all
same
that stuff.
Same thing with me. I'm using the production guitar, the Fender.
I think it's important.
Which, by the way, is available at Sweetwater.com.
Ah, yes. Thank you for that plug.
And there's a nice video that we shot with Richie last time where he goes through that entire guitar and talks about all the things he did to it. And we have one with Billy going through his Attitude bass. So.
Cool.
Let's take another caller.
All right. Thank you again for that call.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks, bro.
And while we're waiting for the next caller, the winner of the Hot Tone pedal and the USB microphone is Tristan. Tristan Dodge 17. They didn't put their last name, but Tristan. I will be contacting you via email after the show.
Cool.
Congratulations.
While I'm waiting for another call to get in through, somebody wanted you to demo the woof woof sound.
Oh, yeah. I can actually do a dog sound here. Like that. I get a little... So when I
there
start
you
doing
go.
It, I'm wireless backstage before we go on. I'll do that a couple of times. I hear some people like, doing the winery dogs.
That's cool.
The winery dog.
Hey, Jeff, would you play the clip for one more time, please?
The opening?
No, the one more time clip. The one that Ronan ripped right before the show.
Yeah, that one. Okay, here we go.
So, Richie, can you tell us, we were talking about this last time you were here, tell us that setup that you did to get that kind of growl sound.
First of all, I'm not playing slide in the beginning of that. You realize that, right?
No.
It sounds like slide, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not a slide.
Interesting.
And just the way I'm moving my fingers around and bending behind notes and stuff.
Yeah, you can fake a slide. As a matter of fact, we'll go ahead. I'll tell my story later.
the only reason I said that because the people were asking me about my slide playing, and I'm like, I didn't play slide on the record. The other thing is your question. There's a rotating speaker. Mesa Boogie makes this rotating speaker thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's on one side. I don't remember what amp I powered it with, but it might have been my 20-watt Marshall head. And then the other side is one of my other combos, probably. I just don't remember. But
right.
What you're hearing is two amps, one normal speaker, one spinning speaker, and then they're panned a certain way. And it's to get a chorus. But rather than plug in a chorus pedal, I wanted a real chorus.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the rotating speaker in the room and put two microphones up, and that's how I got the sound.
Well, it's awesome. It worked really well. Do we have another caller?
We got a couple other callers here. Let me get...
All right, grab a call.
Welcome to the Flow and Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have the name, your name, and where you're calling from, and your question for Billy or Richie?
Hi, it's James Sadler, and I'm calling from New York. And I wanted to ask him about the dog camp, which is next month. And I also just wanted to talk to him.
Well, they're here.
How you doing? What's your name?
James Sadler, how are you guys?
Great. Very good. How are you?
I got such a good story to tell you guys. You probably even know me. I'm sure you. I don't even know if you. I'm 50 years old. I've been playing guitar for 4 years. And I saw you guys at the Chance in Poughkeepsie. I mean, you're all the way on the West Coast, so I had to stay up late for this, by the way, boys.
Appreciate that.
That was supposed to be funny. I saw you guys at the Chance, and I just fell in love with you guys. I thought, I mean, power trios are my thing. You guys are just friggin' amazing, and I haven't missed a show in the New York area. And I signed up for the dog camp. I actually met you, Richie, at BB King's. Michelle introduced me to you. I don't know, you probably don't remember.
Oh, cool. Yeah, Michelle Holland.
Yeah. Remember, you were walking out and you were with your daughter, and I was like all stoked for this for the camp. I was the first one to sign up for the dog camp.
Oh wow! Okay. Cool.
Yeah, and I actually got my buddy who plays the bass. We used to see Billy Sheehan when he played in Yonkers at the Rising Sun. Remember that, Billy?
That's what he played there.
See the teeth.
Absolutely. So my buddy's a bass player, and I'm bringing a drummer, and we got a little power trio, and then we went to Ridgefield Playhouse. Remember the Ridgefield Playhouse show?
I do.
Do you remember what happened there?
Tell me.
What happened there is I got in a scuffle with some bouncer was harassing my girlfriend. I got in a scuffle with the bouncer. The dog camp called me up the next day and said I can't go.
Now I know who you are.
Yeah.
Now I know the whole story. Yeah, that
what?
Sucks.
So you tell me this story, dude. This is my life's dream to hang out with you guys.
Well, the problem is with the camp, and I guess there's a liability issue with people that have a criminal record. Not that you have a criminal record, but you know what I'm talking about.
I don't. I've been exonerated. This freaking bouncer was wrong.
Yeah, that's not what I meant. But the fact that it happened is something that we can't do anything, because I believe somebody investigated it and tried to figure out what it could be done, but it's really up to the camp. Unfortunately, it's not up to us.
Well, James, we appreciate
it. It's a rock band, for God's sake.
Well, we appreciate you calling in, James.
Off to your girlfriend. I mean, you try to take him out, even though the guy was 400 pounds and he beat the crap out of him.
Well, hopefully we get to see you at one of our concerts in the future.
Thanks a lot for calling in.
Yeah, thank you, man. Well, we're out of...
Do we have another caller?
You want me to take one more?
Yeah, take
okay, here we go. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
Hi. My name is Steve, and I'm calling from East Rutherford, Carlstadt, New Jersey. I'm sorry.
Hi, Steve.
Do you have a question for Billy or Richie?
Yeah. Actually, I just wanted to ask the guys about their... how they go about picking the cover tunes for the gigs. Being that...
I'm laughing because, you know, I am like very weird with cover songs, and it's not as a guitar player, but mostly as a singer. There's certain things.
Well, sorry, not actually cover tunes, but like how they pick like their own tunes, which one they incorporate into the gig. You know, like what makes Richie say, okay, I'm going to do, you know, what the devil tells me to.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm trying to.
They chose Shy Boy.
That's what I'm about to tell you is that basically I tend to do cover songs that have been influential in some way. So, for example, when we did the Elvin Bishop tune, that was a song that was an influence to me. And I thought that by covering it, I could do it justice because I was familiar with the genre and the artist.
Okay.
With Shy Boy, it's also a song that, for me personally, was influential because I was a big fan of Billy's with Talis and David Lee Roth. So that kind of ties back to my early years as a fan. So for me personally, and I'm sure Billy will have something to add, I like to do covers that are significant to me from my past. And that's kind of my thing. I don't know, Billy, what about you?
Yeah, same thing. Something that had something to do with a time or a place or a situation where a song meant something to you, or a song that's special for a lot of people that you know are in the crowd. You know, that's try to judge like that. You know, I think when you get when the band gets the right cover tune, Van Halen with "You Really Got Me," man, that defined the band. You know,
absolutely,
right. Yeah, put them on the map.
And Summertime Blues for The Who, you know, that was, you know, a lot of bands get these. The Beatles were a copy band. I know on the first Beatles record, about half of their songs were copy tunes. A Taste of Honey, Twist and Shout, Please Mr. Postman.
Yeah, they did a lot, yeah.
A lot of covers.
Right.
Well, that's
interesting. That's great.
Cool,
well,
man.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks for the question.
Thanks very much, guys. Love the album.
Thank you, bro.
And I have to say that with Shy Boy... have the youngest fan, my own little daughter, loves the song Shy Boy. So, We are coming to the end of the show, and I do actually want to mention, I forgot to mention this earlier, for the dog camp, for those of you that have not registered, there is a promo code that they announced, I think, that ends on the end of June 30th. 10% off. It's WDOGCAMP, W Dog Camp. So you guys should use that if you're going to go to the dog camp.
Yeah, I think there's still some room for a few more people. So if anybody's thinking about it, yeah, you might want to. At some point, they'll probably close it off.
Yeah, this is not something you guys want to miss. If you're able to go, you guys should go. This will be three stellar musicians all there at your fingertips.
And plus, Mike Ritchie and I will be there too.
Well, that's well, again, we want to thank you guys for coming in.
Really
appreciate you guys coming in.
Thanks for having us.
I don't know, Billy, you don't mind playing us a little something on the way out? And then we'll...
Good night, everybody. Have a great week.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Sweetwater. Thanks, guys.